The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Germanless World Cup Football Daily. Yogi Löw's side are out in the group stage, like many previous, proving the worst thing any team could do is win the World Cup, and meaning England should prepare themselves for an embarrassing group stage exit in Qatar. South Korea's 2-0 win means one of the favourites are out, and his late goal might mean Heung-min Son doesn't have to do military service. Sweden hammer Mexico and top the group. In the evening games, a victory for Brazil and a draw for Switzerland mean that England should lose against Belgium or shouldn't. I haven't looked at the ball chart yet. We'll work it out over the next 30 or 40 minutes. It could be my humps day on The Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Joining me today, Barry Glendenning and John Bruin, and we will begin with Germany becoming the fourth defending champions to exit at the group stage in the past five World Cups. Just like France as defending champions in 2002, Italy in 2010, Spain in 2014. The first time Yogi Löw hasn't reached the semi-finals in six tournaments. Where did it all go wrong? Jonathan Wilson was at the game. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm having a lovely time. Did you enjoy the game?
Yeah, I did. I've enjoyed the World Cup. I think it's been really good. And the game was, the last 2 days have been full of drama and full of incident and thoroughly engaging.
Germany haven't been particularly good this World Cup, and they went into the tournament as one of the favourites. Are you surprised by how poor they've been?
Yes, no. I mean, I've been surprised by how poor they've been. I've never been a Lurf fan, which I know has made me look ridiculous in the past.
This is your moment.
It is my moment, yeah. I shall dance on his grave. he was actually very dignified in his press conference. I began to warm to him as he sifted through the ashes. But I actually thought the last World Cup play began really, really poorly. And they were a little bit thought, Pepe hadn't been sent off in that first game, because he was sent off, so it's a ludicrous thing to say. But they were really bad against Ghana, and Jordan Ayew had squared that ball to Asamoah Gyan, it could have been entirely different. The whole number of things Jordan Ayew could have done differently, it would have transformed the world. But I thought they really struggled at the beginning of the last World Cup, and then he sort of simplified things by moving Lamb back to fullback and starting with Klose up front, even though Klose couldn't play more until 60, 70 minutes. And from the quarterfinal onwards, they did play very well. And so I thought there was elements of that in the game against Mexico, when they just couldn't get a balance right between attack and defence. And I think that was a problem tonight, that the first two games they were probably over-attacking, left themselves very open on the break. And Lurf had talked about that yesterday. He'd said that those transitions, when they had to defend the transitions, weren't working. So the gegenpressing wasn't working, basically. And he changed that today, and they were much better at that in the first half, but they couldn't do anything else. So they stopped Korea attacking, but they didn't have any sort of attacking threat themselves. When Sweden scored and he knew he had to get a goal, and he chucked on Mario Gomez and he chucked on Thomas Müller, he'd been left out for the first time since the semi-final in 2012, and nothing happened. And I think that was a really odd thing, that there was no fire there. There was no sort of anger. There was anybody can have a day when things don't click, when the rhythm isn't there. But you still, and Germany especially, think they still will create chances. They'll still put the ball in the box. They'll still make the opposition make mistakes. They'll still have somebody like Toni Kroos who comes along and does what he does against Sweden. And today there was none of that. And to be honest, if Korea had been better, I thought Korea tactically were very good defensively, but I thought, as Mexico had been, they were quite poor in terms of converting the counter-attacking opportunities they got. And they really could have finished the game much earlier than they did. And then you had that, I don't know what it was like watching on TV, but in the stadium you had this marvellous moment where everybody thought that Kim was just offside, and there's a bit of bafflement of, why are they reviewing this? He's obviously offside. Why are the Korean players getting so agitated about it? And then you see the replay and you think, oh, hang on, it's Kroos, he's played that back. And you can see, you sort of sense the whole press box having the same realisation together, this great collective intake of breath. And that's a goal. He's going to have to give a goal here, and that's it, it's over. And then, of course, the farcical second goal of Neuer sort of being hoisted by his own petard, the thing that made him so effective at the last World Cup, playing way out of his box, and then being dispossessed and Son scoring the winner. And again, there was one of those great goals where you can see for about 10 seconds before it scores that he has to score. So there's no way he wasn't going to get to that ball. And then, yeah, the synthesis of finishes.
Obviously, a lot of people in England are being very smug about how right they were that Leroy Sané should have gone. Was that it? Manchester City fans in particular, obviously, did that subject come up in the press conference? Obviously, it's complete speculation. He may not have made any difference.
Not specifically about Sané. I mean, Lerf was talking about his own future, or rather was not talking about it, saying that he was going to give it a couple of hours to think about it before he said anything, which, yeah, a couple of hours isn't the normal time frame, that kind of thing. People would say a few days, but he was obviously hurting, but, you know, he's very calm about it. He's very, very magnanimous about it. But he sort of started to think, well, his attacking player didn't play well. Miller was poor throughout and thoroughly deserved to be left out today. Ozil had not had a good tournament. Royce has not had a good tournament. Werner's not had a good tournament. So you look at that and you think, well, yeah, Sané would have made a difference. But then maybe the structure of the team was at fault and Sané would equally have struggled. And it's not as if he hasn't picked Sané at all. He did pick him in friendly, so it didn't work. So I don't know. I think it's one of those things that it's an easy criticism to make, whether it's a fair one or not. So God, let's say.
Jonathan, I simply recollect that you wrote a book about goalkeeping once. Neuer, his display, and specifically later on, he's the guy that everyone says revolutionised goalkeeping by essentially playing like Jorge Campos did in the 90s. Don't you think it's odd that this guy has barely played a game since... He's not played since September, is it, in the squad. Does that... What do you think about that? It's just such a strange selection.
I completely agree with that. And it's one of those things, again, you know, it's easy to say in retrospect. But on the other hand, they did have Ter Stegen, who is a very, very good goalkeeper, who's even a similar style of goalkeeper. It's not that you'd be taking this, you know, keeping place very much in his own way, and you'd be replicating him, you know, you'd be replacing him with somebody who just sits on his line. Yeah, Ter Stegen also plays outside of his box, and it'd been effective in qualifiers and in friendlies. So I think the rush to get Neuer back now looks a bit strange. He looked out of nick, and you saw that the free kick he spilled in the first half, and you sort of thought, well, and again, you know, it's impossible to say, but would Neuer have a year ago, without the injury, without the 9 months off he had, 8 months off, would he have made that gaffe? Perhaps not. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think, if I were Ter Stegen, I'd be sort of thinking, well, what have I done wrong here? Why have I been left out, having just, you know, won the league in Spain, having, you know, never let Germany down? Why has Neuer just walked back in, having not played a league game since September?
Johnson, before you went to Russia, your misadventures in trying to secure accommodation in Kazan were a regular subject while we were here in the studio. Are you sleeping under a bridge? How has it all worked out? And how is Kazan for the young football writer about town?
It's absolutely beautiful. The centre is amazing. The Kremlin is genuinely gorgeous, really striking building. It sort of sits on a slight hill just above the river. So as you come in from the station, it sort of suddenly looms up above you, and you sort of get a slight sense of what it must have been like if you'd ridden a horse for like 3 weeks across the steppe, and you suddenly see this kind of incredible building with, I mean, the mosque is new, but the old mosque and the cathedral there. It's a genuinely sort of takes your breath away building. It's a really beautiful building. The sort of the town around there is, you know, it's very good for eating and drinking. So yeah, Kazan's a beautiful place. The apartment, there were several issues with that, but we eventually got them resolved. And it's incredibly convenient. It's just over the road from the stadium. So as I look out now, I can see the huge frontage of the stadium, the largest media facade in the world, 3,400 square metres or something. So yeah, Kazan's a great place, and I'd totally recommend it to anybody.
How many pairs of orthopaedic shoes do you take with you on a trip of this magnitude?
Oh, I mean, that's another issue. I mean, the orthopaedics, orthotics. They'd started to wrinkle. Yeah, the sole on the orthotic had started to come away. So I ordered some new ones before I came over, and they didn't arrive in time because they have to be made in Canada for some reason. And so I had to stick these down with super glue, and, you know, Russian super glue just doesn't seem that super.
It's thoroughly enjoyable to talk to you, Jonathan, as always. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup. We'll talk to you soon, no doubt.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Jonathan Wilson there, out in Russia. Alex Barry says, I knew Germany were in trouble when Barry Glendening picked Timo Werner as one of his favourites for the Golden Boot. Rob says, can the pod explain precisely why, without the need to resort to outdated and frankly ignorant references to World War II, the English take such pleasure in seeing or even contemplating Germany losing? Twitter has been awash with pathetic gloating this afternoon.
I suppose, I mean, asking us or English people to do that without resorting to cliches about World War One or Two is kind of makes it a very difficult question to answer. I suppose if you have to do that, it's because they're so good and so usually ruthlessly efficient, and everyone likes to see very good teams come a cropper.
Don't mention the VAR and all that type of gag. Yeah, it's because simply that it's that famous Gary Lineker quote, isn't it? Football is a game played by 22 men, and at the end, Germany win on penalties. And if you are of a certain age, and that could range from 60 to 10, yeah, that's what you've seen, is that Germany have been a great team, and seeing them fail is fun, because also it does give England, or the English, the idea that they might not fail.
If only there was a word for taking pleasure in, yes, someone else's misfortune. You know, I don't know if anyone's come up with one.
No, I don't have one. Certainly, no, there's nothing. Nothing springs to mind. A German word? No. Edward says, is it a coincidence that the teams that have won the last two World Cups have both featured strong cores that at the time were coached by Pep Guardiola? As an Englishman, I say this not to provide irrefutable evidence that England will win the competition, but it perhaps helps explain why many of these German players have regressed, Müller perhaps being the most obvious example. John, you were disagreeing with this before we recorded.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that I don't think that Manchester City's players have necessarily had a stellar tournament so far. Though you would say that perhaps the English players from Manchester City have done okay. I mean, John Stones has scored twice. Has he been tested a defender? I wouldn't say so far. Kyle Walker's done okay. Again, still yet to be tested. Problematically, Raheem Sterling, I would say, has been the poor of England's forwards so far. But push it a little further beyond the England team, and you've got a series of players who have had indistinguished tournaments. I mean, Vincent Kompany's been injured. Gundogan is part of that German failure. And then Benjamin Mendy's only played a little bit of a part. Nicolas Otamendi, well, we can't say that Argentina's defending has been any good whatsoever. So that's a theory to be put to the test, I would say.
Richard says, after their embarrassing exit, should Germany make dramatic changes and copy the English model? Padre, when the World Cup expands to 48 teams, do you think we'll see a lot more bad teams such as Saudi Arabia and Germany? And Vishnu says, this victory of Korea over Germany arguably ranks higher than the one over Italy. Surely enough for a military service exemption for Sun, which certainly Spurs fans will be hoping for.
I believe he only gets a military service exemption if South Korea win the World Cup, which they won't, or win the Asian Cup, which they might. But I think they're the only two things that guarantee him an exemption.
If any of their players deserve an exemption, it's Lee. Who got one right in the crackers. Didn't he? In the last minute, he actually set up an attack. It was such a powerful deflection from, was it?
It was Müller.
Yeah.
Took from close range right into his crown jewels. And Lee went down and he was in agony. And there was no, you know, he was not faking it. So, I mean, that is the ultimate taking one for the team, because he was down for a good 2 minutes. And I'm surprised he was able to get up. But as he pushes his swollen nads around in a wheelbarrow,
counts them
in Kazan tonight, I expect he'll have a big smile on his face.
All right, Mexico 0, Sweden 3. That means Sweden top this group. Barry, you did the minute by minute of this game. Did you have a nice time while you did it?
I did. It was very entertaining. At one point, I pretty much abandoned all coverage of Mexico Sweden and focused on the goings-on in Kazan, 1,000 kilometres away between Germany and South Korea instead. And I was sort of like Rick Wakeman or Sister Bliss from Faithless, you know, looking at all these monitors surrounded by keyboards hammering away. It was very, very exciting because the jig was well and truly up for Mexico. They were 3-0 down, absolutely entirely reliant on Germany not scoring, or, you know, indeed South Korea beating Germany. And it was just tremendous fun.
Was there a moment when South Korea scored where you saw the Mexican fans go absolutely
wild? Well, there was a moment when South Korea scored and the Mexican fans went exultant. And then there was a question that the South Korea goal might be disallowed by VAR. But it wasn't. It was flagged for offside, but VAR proved that it was actually Tony Cruz who had played the ball to the South Korean goal scorer. So it stood. So the Mexican players were really confused. Then South Korea scored their second. More delirious excitement for the Mexican fans while their team lost 3-0 1,000 kilometres away. And then at the end of the game, the Swedish players were absolutely delighted and the Mexican players all sank to their knees in despair. And it took quite some time for them to be convinced that it was safe to celebrate that they were through, because they just didn't know. They were so confused and they didn't really know what to believe. And I suppose until they were absolutely certain they weren't going to celebrate for, you know, fear of looking stupid or getting it wrong. It was tremendously exciting.
In the game itself, was Sweden a whole lot better than Mexico?
Not for the first half. Mexico were very susceptible to an aerial assault and they were very shaky in set-piece situations. But Sweden didn't really take control of the game till the second half, but then they really did boss it. But, you know, Carlos Vela had a few chances and it was a poor performance from Mexico, I would say, overall, but they got away with it.
We will look at who they will be playing in part two when we will round up Brazil's victory and the draw between Switzerland and Costa Rica. Welcome to part two of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. On the 12th of July, Barry, we're doing a live show.
Yes, we are.
We are, yes. You, me, Philippe Auclair and Ellis James. Ram writes, is this all building up to Barry reading out my humps at the live show? It's highly possible. And if it means more people will come and buy a ticket, then absolutely. It's at the Emmanuel Centre.
I work for The Guardian. I cannot knowingly be party to gender bias and the sexual objectification of women in a podcast, recorded or live.
I draw to your attention your reading of last night and the night before.
I didn't know those songs. I've researched my humps because so many people want me to recite it, and I can't be party to such shenanigans of a lewd nature.
But if it sells tickets...
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. At the Emmanuel Centre, July the 12th, previewing the World Cup final between England and, check the wall chart, France. There it is.
I would say, if England are in the World Cup final, a panel featuring me, Welshman Ellis James and Frenchman Philippe Auclair will be worth good money to come along and see.
And I'll be too nervous to talk. So, Brazil 2, Serbia 0. John, I'd say Brazil, they didn't have it all their own way, but sort of look like they're getting into gear. Or am I just a cliched viewer?
I think there are slivers of Brazil having the quality to put away opponents. But Serbia certainly had their chances. Mitrovic in particular made a nuisance of himself, perhaps should have scored a couple of times. And I think Serbia actually will count that as a game that they should have got something out of. Matic let Thiago Silva go for the goal, for Brazil's second goal. An opportunity lost, and you have to say actually Serbia's defending over the last two games has been pretty poor overall.
I mean, for Paulinho's goal, he was given the freedom of the penalty area, wasn't he? And you think back to the Switzerland game as well.
Yeah, in the last two goals that Switzerland scored late on. disappointed really in Serbia. They had a bit of a reputation coming into the tournament. Brazil, it's just difficult to know what sort of team it is. The thing is, Brazil are not the Brazil of 1982 or 1986, are they? That's the thing that we all have to accept these days. And the midfield is stodgy. Neymar is, well, is he all that? I'm not sure. And they're not that great in defence, but they are Brazil. And that's all we have to... That's all we have to go on, really.
I don't know if it's too English or Premier League-centric to wonder why Firmino is not in this team, Barry.
Well, I think he should be in the team. And I think when he has featured, he's been excellent. So I don't know why he's not in the team.
Yeah, I don't think Gabriel Jesus has been much cop, really, this tournament. I'm sure Manchester City fans will try and... We'll have to take issue with that. But yeah, I mean, Firmino is almost like a one-man attack, isn't he? The way that he controls things at the front as a sort of playmaker who plays centre-forward. Maybe Neymar might look better with him in the team.
I mean, in that game, there was a period around the hour mark where Serbia were piling the hurt on Brazil. Like, just totally dominant. Probably should have scored. Mitrovic missed. But they were saying on TV it was an easy header. I don't think it was. We didn't think it was. But
the one that rebounded off the... Was it the keeper parried it? Or it came out to him, but it was a tough angle to get powering it.
And he headed it straight at a covering defender. You know, with a bit of luck, it might have gone in. But, you know, Serbia were really dominant for about 5 minutes. Then Brazil scored their second and... there was a great line. Neymar was showboating a bit. There was a good line in Rob Smythe's minute-by-minute report where he said, the fight has gone out of Serbia, but that doesn't mean some smart arse isn't going to get a boot. you know, that goal, that second goal was crucial to Brazil because they were under a hell of a lot of pressure and they were creaking and there was panic in their defensive ranks. I said, actually, I don't think this Brazil team are anything to be afraid of, but ye countered with the argument that England are hardwired to be afraid of Brazil.
Well, I think that both of those are true. I mean, I don't think Brazil are... I think they're better than 2014, which in retrospect is, you know, or hindsight, is not... You don't have to be that good. But England... or the English football mentality has an inferiority complex to teams like Brazil and Germany. I've just got this sort of image of, say, Eric Dier and Jordan Henderson chasing themselves into the ground as Brazil keep the ball and get tired and maybe...
I really thought we were going to win the World Cup until John started this.
And Jordan Pickford making an error... And just folding under the pressure of playing Brazil. They shouldn't be afraid of Brazil. I think Barry's correct. But that doesn't mean to say that they won't be.
Switzerland 2, Costa Rica 2. In a game where Switzerland certainly didn't play with the passion and hunger that they did against Serbia.
I wonder why.
Yes, but they did just enough, didn't they, really?
Yes. Towards the end of that game, it was about VAR, wasn't it?
Mm. VAR and Costa Rican penalties.
Yeah, one that wasn't given correctly and one that was given and then VAR, I suppose, franked it. And I'm just delighted for Costa Rica to get a point. I think compared to the last World Cup, 2014, where they got to the... Was it to the quarterfinals?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's been disappointing, but it's pretty much the same players. They've had a good run and... Again, the celebrations at the end of the game showed that it really mattered to them.
And fair play for Brian Ruiz to play the penalty in off the keeper's head.
magnificent.
Which was good. So all that means that Mexico play Brazil on Monday, Sweden play Switzerland on Tuesday. Can Mexico... Mexico can beat Brazil. I mean, Mexico must take the confidence from the way they hammered Germany into that game with Brazil. I obviously didn't play very well today, Mexico, but that's what they've got to remember.
No, I think they look tired today. And I suppose winning two games physically and mentally, it's probably taken it out of them. They are undeniably a good side with some very good players. I'd be worried. I'd say Brazil will have noticed the way Sweden didn't let Mexico play the ball out from the back today, you know, pressed them relentlessly, and that really affected their game.
Well, I was going to say Firmino would be the ideal guy for that, wouldn't he? You can't. It sounds like we're picking on Neymar, but you can't ask him. You can't ask him to chase down and gegenpress.
Yeah,
can you?
I'm not very unconvinced by that Brazil team.
As you say that, and we're going to chat to Barney in a minute about England, whether they should finish top of the group or not.
They should. It's just ludicrous.
I really don't think they should, because if you listen, we could easily lose to Japan, Senegal, or Colombia, right? That's fine. We could easily beat them.
Don't think they can lose against Japan?
No, I think we could, but I think the chance
it hasn't even crossed your mind.
Not quite. But we could, okay, but they've got an even chance of beating.
This is why people don't like you. This
listen,
presumptive
get ready for
arrogance that you've got your friendly tomorrow. You've had your two friendlies. You have another friendly tomorrow. Then you have a bye into the quarterfinals. Who would we most like in the final? This is why people don't like England.
I'm not saying we'll definitely win the last 16 game. You're smirking there, aren't you? You're happy with yourself. The point is, we could beat Colombia or Japan or Senegal or whoever gets through, right? So it doesn't matter which one of those we play in the second round. It does matter if we play Brazil or the winners of Sweden, Switzerland in the quarterfinals.
Why?
Because as John said, if we're playing Brazil, we'll walk out and we'll all know deep down we're not going to win. Whereas if we
Everyone's going, oh, Germany, you're out. This is great. We want to play Sweden or Switzerland. Sweden and Switzerland are both better than Germany.
Well, the thing is, Barry, you can have a superiority complex, but you can have an inferiority complex at the same time. And that is the English condition when it comes to football.
It's right. John is absolutely right. We are.
I'm fairly confident that if Ireland were lucky enough to be in England's position, we would not give a flying F who we played next.
Yeah, but you're just there for the crack. You're not there for the football, are you?
Oh, be curry.
Anyway, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll chat to Barney, the head of England, Belgium, and we'll go in depth on Panama versus Tunisia too. Welcome to part three of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. So then, tomorrow's games, Group G, England play Belgium in a straight shootout for who will top the group. Let's talk to Barney Ronay, who is watching England at the World Cup and also watching you watch Brazil tonight. Is that right, Barney?
Yeah, I was in the Spartak Stadium for their routine 2-0 defeat of Serbia, which actually wasn't that routine. I thought they got really pressed back and a bit dinky, Brazil. They got a bit overpowered.
Now Brazil have won the group, that means England want to lose against Belgium, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I always think you've got to try and play the better team, because if you want to lose and then you play the worst team in a cunning strategic move and then lose to them, your World Cup is nothing but disgrace. And you're going to lose at some point, so you may as well lose to the good team. I think England win tomorrow, and I think they'll top the group. And that's just their destiny. I don't think they can play it any other way.
What do we know about who Southgate will pick or won't pick? A lot's been made of the fact that he went to World Cup and he in 2002 and didn't play any games and he didn't like it. So for that reason, he might give an opportunity to players who haven't played.
Yeah, it's kind of a sort of classic sort of Freudian dynamic, isn't it? Southgate passes on the hurt he suffered, or in attempting to avoid passing on the hurts he suffered, interferes in the lives of his players in a way that may not be productive. I'm not entirely sure his experience at that World Cup makes much sense. And I'm not sure it's a good idea to change the team either. I think the back line and the centre of the field have been functioning really well, and that's been the core of the team. I don't know if he will change much. I think it might be one change, and I think he'll just want them to keep on going. We're not that good. We start messing around with the team as soon as we play our first decent opponent. I think Dyer will play, because Henderson's done a lot of running, and I think he likes Dyer, and Dyer could fill in at centre-back as well, so that'll probably happen. I suppose there's also a chance he might rest Sterling and play Rashford, but I think he's been a bit delicate with Sterling, and he might want him to be in form and playing well and maybe scoring a goal. I mean, that would be the dream.
Barney, how are you finding life gadding around Russia?
Well, I find the phrase gadding around offensive. I think it should be withdrawn.
Why do you find it offensive?
Well, it suggests I'm taking some sort of light, enjoyable jaunt, when in fact it's very serious journalistic work.
Okay.
But it's different to other tournaments in that, I mean, France was basically just like stepping into a warm bath and just fun. It was a small place, and you know, France is a beautiful, easy country to get around. It's been said before, but it really is vast here. And you know, cities are so far apart. And even when you're in them, the cities are absolutely enormous. I like it a lot. I mean, where I live, when we first got there to our flat, Stuart James and I, we were quite intimidated by this enormous monolithic building. I come to really like it. There's a lovely little park outside our apartment building. In the evenings, there are benches there are full of chaste teenage courting couples, like small town America, sort of sitting next to each other very politely. And then when you go in the morning, the same benches are covered in very, very drunk men with no shoes who appear to live in the street, who are just sort of tolerated and fine and don't bother anyone. It's a kind of changing in the guard sometime at night.
I sense a bit of optimism with you about England. Is it coming home, or is it going to get stuck round the corner or something like that?
Well, I predicted before the tournament that England could win the World Cup.
Okay.
In what seemed at the time a sort of wild flight offensive, I was just trying to make the point that for the first time they actually had a plan. So at least, you know, if the players were 20% better, they could win because they've got a plan. And I still think there's no one here that they should be terrified of. I mean, watching Brazil tonight, I think of all the teams, Spain have been the most convincing because they also have a plan and their plan is good. And their players are really good. The sort of exchanges between Isco and Iniesta have been the best thing at the World Cup. And there's nothing really in England to match that. Well, I think they can get to quarterfinals and they'll be hard to play against. And they'll come home and they'll be pleased and say, well done, Gareth, and we'll have to find something to moan about at some stage.
Barney, always good to talk to you. Have a lovely evening.
Cheers, see you.
Barney Ronnie there.
Gadding around Moscow.
Panama played Tunisia. John, sell this game to me somehow.
It reminds me of the Saudi Arabia-Egypt game, which I believe Barry here did a minute-by-minute on.
I did.
And you're not doing this one?
No.
The Tunisia-Panama. Well, that game actually turned out to have a few storylines, didn't it? Saudi Arabia won that, and we had the Mo Salah, the latest chapter of misery. But I think Panama have been a team to light up the tournament, sometimes not by the most positive means. They're a group of hatchet men, let's put it that way. But I don't know, maybe there might be a fight in this game. Let's put it that way.
Right, why not? The afternoon games tomorrow are Group H, Japan, Poland, Senegal, Colombia. Japan only need a point to go through, and Senegal will get through. If they draw, if Colombia win, they will overtake Senegal, and that Poland are out. Very hard to know. Japan have done very well, and you'd think now would go through, but in the same way that we've seen other teams with no points win their final game, Japan could also easily lose to Poland, couldn't they, Barry?
They could, actually. There are quite a few teams with nothing left to play for in their final fixture have all really acquitted themselves very well, and it obviously means a hell of a lot to them just to get a win, even if it doesn't help them progress through the knockout rounds. We've seen how delighted the Peru were,
South Korea.
There's been a couple of others, I think.
Saudis as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think something that maybe a misconception of the tournament is that these teams have nothing to play for, even though they're out of the tournament. There's national pride to play for. And it really does mean a lot, especially those smaller teams, to win a World Cup game, to score a World Cup goal. You only have to look at the celebrations of the Costa Rica players that we saw. I mean, Costa Rica hadn't scored before and then they're celebrating. It means so much. Why would you play to lose in these type of games?
Good point. In other football news, UEFA have announced that AC Milan have been banned from playing in this season's Europa League after breaching FFP restrictions. The toughest punishment on a breach of FFP has been handed to them after breaching break-even requirements, with the club overspending on player transfer fees and wages. Milan spent more than €200 million last year on new players amid questions over the financial stability of the Chinese-led consortium that bought the club from Silvio Berlusconi for €800 million in April 2017. I don't know if they're going to appeal. I presume they will appeal this.
And still PSG gets a play.
It's extraordinary. I mean, it just seems to be poor business acumen on their part, because there seem to be so many easy ways around financial fair play. They clearly just haven't bothered to take the necessary steps. But it's quite embarrassing for a team of their stature. But
yeah, I mean, AC Milan in particular is the club around which the Champions League and the concept of the Champions League and the Europa League was formed, with Berlusconi. So that's a hell of a fall if they're falling foul of the rules set in by those competitions.
Just time for some questions. Hoppo says, not the only one to write this or something along these lines, is it wrong that when Baz refers... who was the player, the French player, that Liverpool wanted to sign but didn't sign him because of his knee, slight knee problem?
I know where this is going.
Who is it?
Nabil.
What's his surname?
Nabil Fekir.
Is it wrong that when Baz refers to Fekir, it strongly reminds me of Father Ted? When you said it last night, I really enjoyed the way you said that. In the break between part two and part three, Barry was still in his rant about, you know, England's superiority complex, and then carried on to talk about how Ireland would have no chance of beating Switzerland, but might have a slight chance of beating Brazil.
Yeah. I definitely would rather play Brazil. A, I'd rather go out to Brazil, and B, I would bet my life that Switzerland would beat us, but I would fancy us. I would give us a chance against Brazil.
You would just relish how low Ireland would take Brazil yeah. in entertainment levels, drag them into the sewer, into the style of football. And listen, I've enjoyed many an Ireland game for that reason.
Oh, but, yeah.
Shane Duffy would let Neymar know he was there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Stan says, can I request Barry in his soothing tones take us through Craig Davis' 7 days, specifically the second verse?
I did a poll last night.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to see. I'm getting notions above my station now. Mm. I wanted to do the Inches speech from Any Given Sunday,
yeah, yeah.
The Indianapolis Quint speech from Jaws, mm-hmm. or the final passage of The Great Gatsby. You won't let me.
No, I'd like you to do 7 days by Craig Davis.
Well, all the things I've chosen are probably too long anyway, and I think we've overrun. So
we have. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for listening to the pod. You can rate and review the pod if you want to. Unbelievably, we're top of all these football podcasts, which, you know, is a great surprise, but very pleasurable. John Bruin, thanks for your time.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
I'll leave you with Barry Glendening and Craig David's 7 days.
On my way to see my friends who lived a couple of blocks away from me, oh, as I walked through the subway, it must have been about 3:15. In front of me stood a beautiful honey with a beautiful body. She asked me for the time. I said it had cost her name, a 6-digit number and a date with me tomorrow at 9. Did she decline? No. Didn't she mind? I don't think so. Was it for real? Damn sure. What was the deal? A pretty girl aged 24. So was she keen? She couldn't wait. Cinnamon Queen? Let me update. What did she say? She said she'd love to rendezvous. She asked me what we were going to do, said we'd start with a bottle of Moët for two. Monday, took her for a drink on Tuesday. We were making love by Wednesday, and on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, we chilled on Sunday. I met this girl on Monday, took her for a drink on Tuesday. We were making love by Wednesday. And on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, we chilled on Sunday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.